We left off yesterday toward the bottom of Daf Nun Zayin Amid Beis. We got down to the words Im Havanim Smecha, five lines before the end of the page. We're up to the words Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. So the Gemara is going to continue, at least for the first half of today's Daf, to tell stories around the time of the Churban. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Amar. So the Gemara is right now in the middle of a discussion of how to darshan a pasuk, of what the pasuk is talking about when it says Alecha Ragnu Kol Hayom, Jews had themselves killed all day. What exactly does that mean? So Rabbi Shimon Levi Amar, Zumila Shenitna Bishmini. It's actually a reference to Bris Mila, which was given on the eighth day. So why would that be a reference to Mila? So says Rashi, Zumila Haragnu Kol Hayom Dizimna Demayis, because Mila is dangerous. Sometimes the baby dies, and that's why Mila is a reference to Mila. Obviously, Mila is generally considered to be dangerous. That's why we're Mechal Shabbos to heat up water for the baby. Baby, if the baby needs it, as Gemara and Rabbi Elazar Demila talks about, and it's obviously considered to be a sakana on some level. The Chassam Sofer asks that he hadn't seen too many babies die because of Mila, so he wonders if children don't die anymore because of Mila, how can we say that it's actually dangerous? So he suggests that maybe it's not really dangerous, it is dangerous theoretically, but the mitzvah protects us, and that's why practically people don't die. But had it not been for the mitzvah protecting us, it would be considered dangerous. Rav Menashe Klein asks in his Tshuvas, in the Mishnah Alachos, Chelek Heisim Reish Lamed Zayin, he says, it's hard to say that it's the mitzvah that protects us, because you don't see too many non-Jewish babies die as a result of circumcision either. So there has to be some other pshat. So he has some other pshat, but it's a little bit difficult. But anyway, the assumption is that Mila is inherently dangerous, and therefore Alecha Ragnu Kol Hayom is a reference to Mila, says Rabbi Shua ben Levi. The Mitzudas Dav it on the pasuk says that the diuk to say that it relates to Mila is kol hayom, is the fact that it says kol hayom, meaning it apparently it relates to something that's done during daytime and not at nighttime. Mila is obviously a mitzvah that's done biyom velo belayla, so it's at least the most dangerous mitzvah. It's done biyom velo belayla. There are a number of mitzvahs, dalim minim are also done biyom velo belayla, but aren't quite as dangerous. So it's the most dangerous mitzvah done biyom velo belayla. So it must be a reference to Mila. Rabbi Shimon Lakish Amar Elu Talmidei Chacham Shemarin Hilchos Shechita Biatzman. He says, no, it's a reference to Talmidei Chacham who demonstrate Hilchos Shechita on themselves. Dama Rava, Kol Mili Lichz Yinish Benafshei, Bar Mishchita V'Davar Acher. All halachos, a person is allowed to demonstrate on himself, except for two things, except for Shechita and Davar Acher, which Rashi says is Tzara'as, to show different types of Nega'im. That's not something to do for yourself. Now, why are you not allowed to demonstrate these things on oneself? So says Rashi, the reason why Shechita should not be demonstrated on oneself is Shema Yitchevenu Begrono, that we're afraid that if you take a Shechita knife and you start showing, look, this is how you shecht an animal, and you run it across that part of your neck, so we're afraid that you might actually cut yourself, you might actually kill yourself. So it's just dangerous to play with sharp objects around your neck. That's why you shouldn't demonstrate Shechita on yourself. Marsha says that's not the Pshat. Marsha says that the Pshat in Shechita is similar to what Rashi says the Pshat is in Davar Acher. Right? In Davar Acher, Rashi says, Tzaras umar sagam mipnei shemesukan likbatzalav. It's like an ayin hara, that you're going to demonstrate these things on your own body. It makes it like an ayin hara, that it's more likely that it's going to, it's like al tiftach peh. The Marsha says, if we have a concept that you're not even supposed to say things that the Satan might jump on and start to do, so of course you shouldn't actively demonstrate things that the Satan can grab onto and actually do to you. So you shouldn't demonstrate Shechita also, says the Marsha, for that same reason. Not because we're afraid you're going to hurt yourself physically, but because we're afraid that when one demonstrates Shechita, the Satan's going to say, so you see, I could do Shechita on this guy, I can kill this guy. There's obviously a nafkamina between Rashi and the Marsha. Nafkamina is, what if one demonstrates Shechita without a knife? Meaning, you want to demonstrate the makom ha-shechita. So you're teaching al-shechita, you take your finger and you show across the part of the neck where you do the shechita. So according to Rashi, there's no danger. Your finger is not going to cut you, so then it shouldn't be a problem. According to the Marsha, demonstrating any sort of symbol of shechita on oneself, l'chora, should be a problem. That seems to be enough gemina. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Rav Nachman Yitzchak says a different pshat in what the pasuk is referring to. Elu talmidei chachamim shememisin atzman al divrei Torah. That this is a reference to Talmidei Chacham who kill themselves over divrei Torah. Because Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Tam Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, ein divrei Torah miskaimin ela b'misha meimis atzmo aleihem. Torah only stays with people who kill themselves over it. Shenemar zos haTorah adam ki yamos ba'ohel. That the pasuk says ki yamos ba'ohel, that a person kills himself in the ohel shel Torah. Right, it's physically debilitating for a person to immerse himself totally in Torah. It's not necessarily good for the body. It's good for the soul. So a person. It's a physically draining experience to immerse oneself in Torah. Amar Rabba Bar Brachana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Arba'im Sa'a Ktsutzei Tfilin Nimtzu Barashei Harugei Beitar. There were 40 Sa'a of Tfilin Batim that were found on the heads of the Harugei Beitar. Rabbi Yaneb Rabbi Shmuel Amar Shalosh Kupos Shel Arba'im Sa'a. No, that it wasn't 40 Sa'a. It was 3 boxes, each containing 40 sa'a of tefillin batim that were found from the Haruge Beitar. B'masnisatana, arba'im kupos shel shalosh shalosh se'in. That it was 40 boxes, each containing 3 se'in. Now obviously the second and the third pshat are not really different in terms of the volume, it's just different in terms of how they were packaged. But not in terms of the volume. Either way, it was 120 sa'a. But there's a major difference between the first approach and approaches 2 and 3. First approach says that there was 40 sit-in of tefillin, which, by the way, is not an astounding number. You talk about the amount of people that were killed by Arugei Beitar. It seems like a reasonable number that's how many people were wearing the tefillin, especially since they wore tefillin all day. You didn't even have to catch them during davening. So it doesn't seem like an astounding number. But anyway, but there's a large discrepancy between the first pshat and the second and third pshat. So says the Gemara, no discrepancy at all. V'lo pligi hadereisha hadedara. There's a difference between the bottom of the shel rosh and the bottom of the shel yad. In terms of the shel rosh, so what's the difference? So Rashi explains the difference is that when it comes to the shel rosh, there are 4 different sections in the shel rosh to put in one parasha at a time. In the shel yad, it's one big section where you put in one long scroll that has all 4 parashios. So since there are 4 different sections in the shel rosh is much larger than the shel yad is. So since the shel rosh is typically much larger than the shel yad is, if you got all the pairs of tefillin, you would have 40 se'in of shel yad and 120 se'in of shel rosh. It would be 3 times as big, because it's not going to be 4 times as big, because even though it's 4 sections, because each section has only, Rashi points out, each section has only 1 parsha, whereas by the shel yad, it's 1 section, but it has all 4 parshios. The scroll that you put into that one section of the shel yad is obviously much larger. So anyway, it's going to come out to roughly this discrepancy between the shel rosh and the shel yad. The problem with Rashi is the Marsha points out, the Rashash points out, Maram Shif points out, that the problem is that we're trying to explain the first shita that said that it was only 40 sinas talking about the tefillin shel yad. Problem is, it said that it was nimtzu birashei haruge beitar, that it was found on the heads of the haruge beitar. What in the world was their shel yad doing on their heads, right? If it was found birashei haruge beitar, so some of the achronim say no, birashei doesn't mean on their heads; it means on the leaders, on the greatest of the haruge beitar, on the communal leaders, the rosh of the haruge beitar doesn't mean where it was physically on the body. However, the Rashash has a totally different pshat. Rashash says, furthermore, another kashan Rashi, he says, how many people do you know have tefillin shel yad that's much, much smaller than the tefillin shel rosh? Doesn't it? Tefillin don't come like that. Typically, they're roughly the same size. Maybe not exactly the same size, but they're roughly the same size. Really, it's going to be 3 times larger when it's tefillin shel rosh than the tefillin shel yad is. It doesn't really happen. So Rashash says a different pshat. He says that we know the halacha is when you put on tefillin, first you put on the shel yad, then you put on the shel rosh. When you take them off, first you take off the shel rosh, then you take off the shel yad. So he says there were 3 basic time periods. There's a time period before the shel rosh is on, when the shel yad is already on. There's a time period when they're both on. And then there's after the shel rosh is off, when the shel yad is still on. So he says it could be that they caught them, that some people they caught it, they got it, they came around Shachris time, and there were many different minyanim running at different times. So some of the people they got, a third of the people they got after they had put on the shel yad, before they had put on the shel rosh, a third of the people they got wearing both, and a third of the people they got after they had removed the shel rosh, before they had removed their shaliyat. Again, this assumes that they only wore it during davening, by the way, but also, and it also assumes that you have an even likelihood, this is what I didn't get about it, that you have an even likelihood of catching someone after the shaliyat, before the shalrosh, as you do with both. That would have to be a pretty quick minion. We don't even come close to that. But he says, but then the some people do, right? Hadidara hadresha is it comes out very good that the one that says that it was 40 sin of batim of tefillin, that was the tefillin shel rosh, because only 1/3 of the people that they caught were actually wearing the tefillin shel rosh at the time. The one that says it was 120 sin, that was tefillin shel yad, because all of the people that they caught, not just 1/3, every single one of them that were wearing tefillin were wearing shaliyad, because you start with the shaliyad and you finish with the shaliyad. So that's his charifus pshat, even though it's hard to say that it's really pshat. Okay, says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yassi, Arba Kavin Moach Nimtzu Alev Nachas. They found 4 kavin of brain matter on a single stone. That's how badly Jews were beaten up against the stones, that the brain matter was actually flowing out onto the rocks. Ula Amar Tishas Kavin. Ula says it was 9 kav. Amar Rav Kahana Vite Mashila Bar Mari. Mikra, what's the pasuk that indicates that this is in fact so? Bas Bavel Ashtuda Shesh Ashrei Sheyishalim Lach. The pasuk first indicates that they were going to be repaid for in kind for what they did to us, and then it tells us how the Babylonians suffered. Ashrei Sheyochas V'Nafatzus Olech Al Asela. It says how their children were beaten against rocks where their brain matter was coming out. So the pasuk isn't talking about how it happened to the Jewish people. Pasuk is talking about how it happened to Bavel. But the pasuk prefaces that onesh that happened to them by saying that they're going to get whatever they gave to us. So that's how we know that it must have happened to us as well. B'nei Tzion Ayikarim Amusulam Bipaz. Pasuk says that the B'nei Tzion are Misulaim Bipaz. What does that mean? My Misulaim Bipaz, says the Gemara. If you want to say that it means that they were covered with paz, which is a very precious type of stone. There's a very small amount of this precious stone that exists in this world. And half of it is in Rome, half of it is in the rest of the world. So it can't be that all the Bnei Tzion, all the Jewish people, all the Jewish children had paz all over themselves, had this type of precious stone all over the place. It's a very, very rare thing. It's impossible that there would have been enough supply for people to have it regularly. Rather, it's an expression. It's trying to say that the Bnei Tzion were so beautiful that they made this precious, beautiful stone look ugly by comparison. That's how beautiful the children of Israel were. At first, the Chashuvim of Rome used to take very nice pictures that they had in their signet rings while they were having Tashmish Amita. They would put it in front of them, and that's when they would have Tashmish Amita, because the assumption was that when one has a beautiful image in their minds or in front of them, when they see a beautiful image, it's going to have an effect on the children, the offspring that's going to be produced by that Tashmish. So when they would have Tashmish, they would keep, that was the most beautiful thing they could think of, some beautiful image from their signet rings. This is an idea that you have a lot, by the way, besides for Yaakov Avinu with the sheep and everything. This was an idea that you have a lot about how the image of what a person keeps in mind when they're having Tashmish, or what a person sees when they're having Tashmish, somehow affects the children. That's what the Gemara says in Brachos, that Rabbi Yochanan would sit al Shari Tvila, because that would be the first thing the women would see when they would come out of the mikvah, is that they would see Rabbi Yochanan, who is this very beautiful person, and in that way that would affect the children that they would have from the Tashmish with their husbands at the Lel Tefillah, because they saw this extremely beautiful person. Whatever the pshat is, that's the assumption the Gemara makes all the time. So mikan ve'elach ma'isu b'nei Yisrael va'ashi bekari dupurayu mishamshi. But then they realize that there's something even more beautiful in the world. There are Jewish children who are even more beautiful. So they would tie the Jewish children to their bedposts so that they could look at the beautiful Jewish children as they were having Tashmish, hoping that would have an effect on the type of children that they themselves would produce. So Amar le'echad b'chavrei, one of the Jewish children said to the other, as they were tied to the bedpost, they said, you know, I learned a lot of Chumash, I learned a lot of the Tokacha, where it says how we're going to suffer, but ha, hecha ksiva, where does it say this? Where does it say this in the Torah? Samalei gam kol choli v'kol maka asher lo kasu b'sefer HaTorah zos. Well, the pasuk in the Torah says kol choli v'kol maka that it doesn't say in Sefer HaTorah zos, Hashem is going to cause us to go through also. That's a reference to this. Why would that be a reference to this as opposed to anything else? So Pashup Pshat is it's not. It's a reference to everything. Anything that doesn't say in the Torah, you can attribute to this pasuk. But a lot of the Akronim over here say that no, it's dafka a reference to this because it something that's maguna, something that that's inappropriate to say straight out, the Torah would refer to in an indirect way. So what can be more maguna than children being tied to bedposts as these people are having Tashma Shamita? So Amar, so the child who heard that pasuk said, "Kama marchikna miduchta plan." He says, "Really, I never got up to that pasuk. How far am I away from that in my learning? How far am I away from getting up to that pasuk?" Keep in mind, it's at the end of Sefer Devarim, so you know he wasn't up to it yet. So Amalei ingid pusto palgi says, "Don't worry, you're almost there. You're just a little bit away. You're a column and a half away from getting up to that pasuk." Amalei imatay legabe lo itzrichli lach. He says, "You know, if I would have gotten up to that pasuk already, I wouldn't have had to ask you what pshat is and where we got this from. I have no idea what the pshat in this story is, what this conversation is about. I looked around a little bit, didn't find anything." What does the pasuk refer to? So it refers to the following: Arba meos bate knesios hayu bekrach Beitar. There were 400 bate knesios in the city of Beitar. Ubekal achas veachas hayu ba arba meos melamde tinokos. Each of those 400 bate knesios had 400 melamde tinokos. Ubekal echad veechad hayu lufanav arba meos tinokos shabbos rabban. And each of those melamde tinokos had 400 students to teach. So this is apparently supposed to be a positive thing. Problem is, if you look in the Gemara in Bava Basra Daf Chaf Aleph, the Gemara describes how many children are supposed to be in a given class of a melamed tinokos. And the Gemara, it's a little bit of machlokes, but the Gemara seems like it says 25 children per class. Any more than 25 children per class, there's no way a melamed tinokos can be effective with more than 25 children per class. There's no way he can focus on the children properly. So now they have all sorts of tricks. If they want to put more children, they give an assistant teacher, which the Gemara talks about. The Gemara talks about if they would have an assistant, maybe you can have a little more, whatever. But 400 is definitely off. You definitely can't have 400 students in a class. So the Ben Yoyada explains that it doesn't mean each Malami Tinokos taught 400 kids. It's like the Menahel of the yeshiva. You know, each there was a Menahel over 400 kids, and he had a bunch of different Rebbeim working, so he had 20 different Rebbeim teaching the 400 kids. The problem is, it doesn't sound that way from the Gemara. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says that that the way it worked was he would only teach 25 at a time, but overall he had 400 students. The problem with that is, do the math. How much time do you think he gave to each class then? Meaning 25 at a time, 400 students, that means if he was teaching 16 hours a day, then he taught each student, what, an hour? Right, so that's a problem. Why would they only taught them for an hour? I don't know the history, but that's a little bit difficult. So it must be a euphemism. Probably not really 400 students. It meant to say that there were a lot of kids there, that there were a lot of people learning Torah. 400 is a number that the Gemara uses as an expression, as an exaggeration sometimes. Gemara talks about someone wrote 400 Sifrei Torah, right? The Gemara Baba Basra says that, no, he didn't really, the Gemara itself says, he didn't really write 400 Sifrei Torah. He wrote the pasuk Kimi Tzion Teitzei Sora 400 times. I mean, sometimes the Gemara will just use the number 400, planted 400 vineyards, right? So it doesn't always mean that it's literal, to be taken literally, that it's 400. It just meant there was an impressive amount of children in that city and in the shuls of that city. There were an impressive amount of shuls and an impressive amount of children learning Torah in each of those shuls. The Ein Eliyahu explains this a little bit based on the Gemara in Ervin and Dalad. The Gemara in Ervin and Dalad praises Rabbi Preda, who would teach one of his Talmidim 400 times till the kid got it. The guy couldn't figure it out till he taught it to him 400 times, and he had the patience to teach it to him 400 times. So he says that perhaps this is a reference to that. It doesn't mean that there were 400 students, but that he taught, the Melamde Tinokos were so patient that they taught as if it was 400 separate students that they had to teach to. Okay. Ukshaya Oyev Nichnas L'Sham, and when the enemy would come in, Hayidokinos Amachotre, and the students would come and attack him and beat him with their sticks. Ukshagavar Oyev, but obviously these little students weren't going to overpower the enemy soldiers, so when the enemies would overpower them, V'lachtum Karkum V'lachtum, and they captured them, Karkum B'Sifra, they wrapped them in their svarim and they burned them on fire. Rabbi Shua ben Chananya went to a large city in Rome. Yesh Bebeis Hasurim, they told him that there's a certain tinok, there's a certain young child in the jail, Yefei Einayim V'tov Roi V'kivtzos of Suzurus L'Taltalim, who's an extremely beautiful child. His hair is arranged in beautiful rows. Very, very beautiful child. And I guess the point is that not only is he beautiful, he's in the Beis Hasurim and he's still beautiful. Normally when you're in such a place, it sort of ruins your beauty a little bit. It's hard to keep that shiny countenance when you're in a place like that, but still, he was still beautiful. Halach V'amen al Pesach Beis Hasurim, so he went and he stood by the doorway to the jail, Amar, and he said the following pasuk, Mi nasan l'mashisa Yaakov Yisrael levozazim. Right, who's caused this to happen to Klal Yisrael? Ana oso tinok v'amar, the child heard that, and he responded with a pasuk of his own. He said, Halo Hashem zuchatanu lo, v'lo avu b'drachav haloch v'lo shamu b'taraso. Hashem has done this because we've sinned to him, we haven't followed in his ways, we didn't listen to his Torah. So Amar, Rabbi Shubha Chananya said, Muftachni bo shemora hora abi Yisrael. Such a child answers like that, I am absolutely certain such a child is going to be a mora hora abi Yisrael. The Achronim deal with, how did he know he's going to be a mora hora abi Yisrael? Because he knew a pasuk. All the children knew Pesukim. Well, how did he know that he was going to be a Moro Rabbi Yisrael just because he responded in that way? So I saw a number of different pshat, and my favorite was the Chassam Sofer's pshat. Chassam Sofer says, based on the Gemara in Bava Basra, with the conversation between Tarnas Rofus HaRasha and Rabbi Akiva, that Tarnas Rofus HaRasha asked Rabbi Akiva, you know, if God loves Aniyim so much, if he loves poor people so much, why doesn't he just give them money? Right, obviously he's trying to punish the Aniyim, and if he's trying to punish the Aniyim, we shouldn't give them money, because God is trying to punish them. And Rabbi Akiva says, no, you're getting it all wrong. And then the fact that Aniyim are poor is not because it's a Midas Hadin that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to punish them. No, it's a Midas HaRachamim on us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to give us an opportunity to support them. So the suffering is a Midas HaRachamim on us. So he says, Rabbi Shimon Chanani was confused. Klal Yisrael is getting punished, and he wanted to know, is this Midas Hadin that the people who are in jail are getting punished because they deserve it? Or is it Midas HaRachman that we said before that the suffering of Klal Yisrael is because they were not Mechabi Talmidei Chachamim enough? They were Mevaza Talmidei Chachamim. So if they're Mevaza Talmidei Chachamim, what's the Midas HaRachman going to do? Give an opportunity for showing kavod for Talmidei Chachamim. So the Midas HaRachman would take the Talmidei Chachamim, put him in jail, so that we can have the opportunity to be po to them and show this extra level of kavod for Talmidei Chachamim. So he goes to the jail and he says, what's going on over here? Mi nasan l'mashisa Yaakov Yisrael. Who causes? Is it the Midas HaRachamim or is it the Midas HaDin? And the child says, Halo Hashem zu chatanu lo, that Halo Hashem, the Shem Hashem, which is the Midas HaRachamim, zu chatanu lo, this is the sin that we did to him. The sin of being mevaza Talmidei Chachamim, and that's why he's giving us the opportunity to fix that sin by being pulled to the Talmidei Chachamim from jail. So Rabbi Yoshua Ben says, ah, the kid's a Talmud Chacham, right? Where the kid at least has potential to be a Talmud Chacham. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us the opportunity to be pulled to him. And therefore he says, ha'avod, the back in the Gemara Sheni, zazmi kanach evdenu b'chol momen shaposkin alav. I'm going to redeem him with whatever money they charge. I'll get him out of there. Amr lo, zazmi shamach apadu b'momen harbe. And he spent a good deal of money to get him out of there. Lo, hey, yamuatanach ha'ra Rabbi Yisrael. In fact, he became a Mara Rabbi Yisrael. Man Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. He is the famous Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. Or one of the famous Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. There was Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha Kohen Gadol, and there was another Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. The Achronim work on which one it was, but probably not the Kohen Gadol because it was later. But Tosus points out the obvious problem. Tosus and Daf Mem Hei points out the problem also, that the Gemara Mem Hei says you're not allowed to be poda do pidyon shvuyim for Yosem Mikdei Shavuot for more than the Shavuot is worth. You're not allowed to overspend on pidyon shvuyim. Why was it allowed? So Tosus over there says because someone who's a muflag b'chachma, you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to overspend on someone who's an unusual Talmud Chacham. So that's why it's okay. Tosafot over here says the same thing at the end. He says, Inam Yishum de Muflag B'Chachma Haya. Tosafot over here gives another pshat. It says, not just Muflag B'Chachma, maybe it's because over here there was a threat of death, meaning normally now they spend more on Pidyon Shvuyim when they're not going to kill the guy. But if there's a threat that they might kill the guy, it's Sakanas Nefashos, then you are in fact allowed to spend more on the Pidyon Shvuyim. At the time we discussed that the Amshel Shlomo points out that Meram Rutenberg, when he was in jail, did not allow them to spend extra on his Pidyon Shvuyim, even though he was muflag b'chachma, and the Marshal struggles with that, why it is that he would not allow them to, when you're a muflag b'chachma. This kid only had the potential to be a muflag b'chachma. Aram Rutenberg was a muflag b'chachma. Why is it that he didn't allow them? So Marshal struggles with it, says it must have been that he was concerned that they would make a business out of catching all the leaders of Torah, and they would it would stop Torah from being taught in Klal Yisrael, because all of our Torah leaders would end up being captured. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Ma'isa b'bno b'bito shel Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. Once we're on the topic of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, story happened with the son and the daughter of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, shenashvu l'shnei adonim, that they were captured by two separate masters. We read this in one of the kinos on Tishbab. Liyam nizdav gushneim b'makom echad, and one day they happened to both of the masters happened to be around the same place. Zelmer yesh li'eved she'in ki yafyo b'chala olam, and once that I have an eved that's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen in the world. Zelmer yesh li'shivcha she'in b'chala olam kulo ki yafyo, and the other one said, well, I have a shivcha that's the most beautiful girl you've ever seen. Amru bovin asim zelazev nachlak b'vlados. They said, let's marry them off and we'll divide the children. They'll have such great genes. We'll have the most beautiful avadim. Hichnisum l'cheder ze yashav b'keren zav ze v'zu yashav b'keren zav ze. They put them into a room. Each one sat in their own corner. Ze omer ani kohen ben kohanim gedolim esa shivcha. The boy said, what? I'm a kohen, the son of a descendant of kohanim gedolim. You think I'm going to marry a shivcha? V'zos omer ani kohenes bas kohanim gedolim inasi la'eved. I'm a kohenes, the daughter of kohanim gedolim. Can I marry an eved? Ubachu kal laila, they spent all night crying. Kivin shalom amur ha-shachar, ikiru ze ze. When amur ha-shachar came, there was a little bit of light. They saw each other. V'naflu ze al ze, and they fell on each other. V'go b'v'chia, and they cried out, ad shiyatza nishmas, until the neshamas left them. V'aleim konin Yirmiyahu al eila ani b'chia, eini eini yorda mayim. That's what Yirmiyahu refers to when he says, al eila ani b'chia, eini eini yorda mayim. Where do we see a reference to our brother and sister in that pasuk? So the Meshech Chachma explains that eini eini, when the ayin is the eyes, are a reference to a brother and a sister, are symbolic of a brother and sister. He quotes Yerushalmi in Maseches Ma'aser Sheni. The Gemara in Brachos a lot of times tells us in a couple of places about when you dream about certain things, then it means something, then it's symbolic of something. So along those lines, Yerushalmi in Ma'aser Sheni says that a person has a dream of an eye being menashek, another eye, two eyes kissing. It's a simon of a brother and a sister, a brother who is Boel, his sister. So apparently eyes represent a brother and sister. So eini eini means two siblings, right? That's the reference. Well, this one is. Doesn't mean so the previous story was.
Oh, so the Gemara is saying, yeah. One Ishmael, we'll talk about another Ishmael.
Exactly. Okay. Because the other one was after the Korban. Amresh Lakish, Maisa be Isha Achat, meaning the other one was just a child after the Korban. This is, you know, his children. Amresh Lakish, Maisa be Isha Achas, Vitsafnas Bas Peniel Shema. There's a story of a woman, Safnas Bas Peniel. Safnas Shakol Sofen Biofia. Safnas, because everyone used to look at her beauty. Bas Peniel, Bito Shokongoto Shashimish Lufnai Vilufnim. She was called Bas Peniel because she was the daughter of the Kohen Gadol who would serve Lufnai Vilufnim. Shinesal Ba Shavai Kala Laila. And the captors abused her all night. The next day they dressed her in seven garments and they brought her out to sell her. A certain exceedingly disgusting man came interested in buying her, and he said, so let me see your beauty. I mean, take off the clothing, let me see your beauty. He said, look, if you want to buy her, but I guarantee you there's nothing, no one as beautiful as her. You don't have to see it. So Amar lo, afal pi kein, he says, no, I want to see it. Hivshita shish chaluk, and they took off six of her garments. Ushvi karata v'nispal shabafa, the seventh one she ripped off and rolled around in the ashes. Amar lefan of ribono shalom, im aleinu lo chasta, akdusha shimcha agibar lama lo tachus. If you're not going to have rachmanos on us, at least have rachmanos on your own, on the sanctity of your own name. V'alei akonin Yirmiyo, and that's what Yirmiyo refers to when he says, bas ami chigri sak, v'hispal shiba efer, that a daughter of our nation is wearing sackcloth, rolling around in the ashes. That the enemy has come aleinu. Alecha lo nemar. It doesn't say alecha, ela aleinu. Kaviyachal alive alecha b'shodid. It's as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is suffering together with Klal Yisrael. That's what we pointed out. Tulsa said that's what the symbolism was when Titus HaRasha stabbed the Parochas, that it was bleeding, because it was a representative, it was representative of not just Klal Yisrael suffering, but to show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was suffering through the suffering of Klal Yisrael, Kaviyachol. Amar Avidu Amar Rav, Maiduch Siv Ashku Gever Veso V'ish Nachlaso, Maisa Ba'adamechot Shunasin Enav Beishas Rav. A story happened of a guy who wanted to marry his boss, his wife. Vishul did Nagrihava. He worked for a carpenter. So Pamachas Hutzrach Lilvos. So the boss needed to borrow money once. So Amalo Shagarishcha Etzliva Alvena. So the student said, "Send your wife to me, and we'll take care of it. We'll do business. Just send your wife to me as the shliach." So apparently he didn't suspect anything. He didn't think that he was asking to send his wife because he wanted to do anything to her. Shiger ishto etzlo. So he sent his wife to her. Shaha ima shloshi yamim. So and he kept her for 3 days. Kadamuva etzlo. Amarlo. So the boss came looking for his wife. Amarlo ishti shishigarti lachechani. So I sent my wife to you 3 days ago. I haven't seen her since. Do you have any idea? I don't know what took him 3 days. How long does it take to borrow some money? But he says, where's my wife? So Amarlo ani patarti li alter. He says, I don't know. She was here for 2 minutes. We did the deal. I sent her on her way. Oh, but for shamati shatinokos nesalu babaderech. But I heard that the tinokos, that the young men, were messing around with her on the road. Right, because Dafka said the young men, because otherwise how would he have heard about it? But young men tend to talk about their exploits. So he said, yeah, the young men were messing around with her. I heard about that. Amarlo ma'aseh. So he said, what should I do now? So Amarlo imata shamel atzasi girshu. He says, if you want my advice, you should divorce her. Amarlo ksubasa maruba. He says, but her ksuba is so much, I can't afford to divorce her. I can't afford to pay her ksuba. So Amarlo ani alvecha. Don't worry, I'll lend you the money. V'tein lo ksuba, and you can then pay her ksuba up front, and you'll just pay me back over time. So Amad zevi girsha halachu v'nasa. So the boss divorced her, and the Talmud went in and married her. Now the boss had to pay back the money, but he didn't have the money to pay. So the Talmud said, you want the money, you want to pay me back, and you don't have the money, you know, work for me, and you'll work off all the money that you owe me. So here he was working in the house where his ex-wife was married to the Talmud who tricked him into divorcing his ex-wife. So they would be sitting at the dinner table eating, drinking, having a merry old time. And he was sitting there serving, pouring their drinks. And tears were rolling down his eyes, falling in their cups as they were drinking. And it was on that moment that the Gzar Din against Klal Yisrael was sealed. And some say it was not necessarily that moment where he was crying, but it was the very notion of which is a euphemism. It means two people sleeping with the same woman, two wicks in the same candle, that you have an Eishes Ish, and this other guy was interested in the Eishes Ish, that caused the Churban. Now, it was an interesting halachic issue that comes from this story. He says, I can't divorce my wife because Ksubasa Meruba, the Tashbates in Chela Gimel, Simin Reish Chav Gimel, says, you see from here, that a woman can be ma'akev her own gerushin if the husband doesn't have the money to pay for her Ksuba. The husband says, look, I want to divorce you, I just don't have the money right now. The woman could say, well, you have no right to divorce me if you don't have the money. Meaning Pashas, we would assume, no, he has the right to divorce her. She can then take him to court and make him sell whatever he has or whatever, you know, try to get the ksuba from whatever she can get the ksuba. But says the Tashbe, see from here, he can't divorce her because she has the ability to stop the divorce if he doesn't have the money on hand. The Achronim are not so convinced. The Yeshuas Yaakov in Evin Ezra Simin Kuf Yotes says that that's not true, because the reason that he said, I can't divorce her because I don't have the money, is that if you don't have the money to pay up the ksuba right away, the halach is you have to give the woman mizonos. You're still chayiv to feed her prior to paying her ksuba. So he was saying, I can't divorce her because I don't have the money and I'm not going to be able to give the mizonos. I don't want to keep supporting her. I'm going to keep losing money. Every day I'm going to have to give her mizonos. So it's not going to be worth it for me. But not that the woman has the right to hold back the divorce. And the Bar Hativ in Evin Ezra over there says that you ain't lemeidin mina gadas. You can't learn from halachas from agada to gemara. This has nothing to do with halacha. You can't figure out whether a woman has the right to stop her divorce or not based on an agadita. Okay, says the Gemara Vayter. Lokach minasi krikon. Right, now this goes back to halachic gemaras. If you recall, the Mishnah had said that there were two stages of takanos when it came to sikrikon, when it came to people who would forcefully take fields from Jews. The first stage of the halacha was that that when things were very dangerous, the assumption was that a person who would sell to a sikrikon really had in mind to sell to them. But when things were not as dangerous, then people assumed that when Jews' lives were not necessarily at stake, then when the sikrikon would take the field, you didn't really intend to sell to them. So the first stage was that if you would buy from a sikrikon and then from the balabais, the balabais didn't really want to sell to you. He just felt pressured to do so. But if you would buy from the balabais first and then from the sikrikon, then it is a valid sale. Then they changed it and they made another takana. There was a Mishnah Achrona that made another takana that said that whenever you buy from a sikrikon, you can keep it, you just need to pay a balabais an extra 25%. And then it's okay, because the sikrikon gives it to you at a discount, so pay the balabais an extra 25%, and then you're good. So says Gemara, Amar Rav, Lo Shanu El Dar Melo Lecha Zeku Kni, Aval Bishtar Kana. Going on the first takana, he says the only time where we say that there's such a din of sikrikon, that the mekach, the sale is invalid, is if the balabais told you, yeah, go make a chazaka, be kona of the field. But if you got a shtar from the balabais that says that the balabais sold you his field, even if you bought it from a sikrikon first, if you got a shtar in hand from the balabais, then you are kona of the field totally. Shmuel says, no, shtar is not good enough. You need achrayus actually written into the shtar. He needs to take responsibility that if it gets taken away from you, that he's going to reimburse you. Tanya kavasei to Shmuel. Rabbi Shimon and Lazar Omer, lakach mini isha, v'chazav lakach mini ish, mekchol kaim. You buy from the husband, from the woman, and then from her husband, the sale is valid. Mini ish, v'chazav lakach mini isha, mekchol batal, atchit tichtov lo, achrayus. Right, but if you do it the reverse, it's going to be batel unless she writes achrayus in her shtar. So you see, it's not the shtar that's critical, it's achrayus. Once she's willing to put achrayus in, then you know that the person means to sell it. And we assume the ish-isha relationship is the same as the Jew-sikrikon relationship. Right? It's a relationship of a certain amount of fear, that if a person feels a certain amount of pressure to sell the field. But if they're putting achrayus in, that they're doing on their own. So that is totally fine. So name it havitiyufta de Rav. So isn't that Bryce a raya against Rav, who says all you need is a shtar, you don't need achrayus? Am l'charav, my achrayus na mishtar. Now achrayus over here doesn't mean achrayus, it means shtar. Tana Rabbanan, lakach min ha-sikrikon v'achla shalashanim b'fnei bailim. Let's say you buy something from the sikrikon, you keep the field for 3 years, the bailim never says, the original bailim never says anything. V'chazer u'machra li'achar, then you sell the field to another guy. Ein le'bailim ha-lokeach sheni klum. The bailim cannot go to the second lokeach and say, you still owe me my 25%, I never got my 25% payment for this field. So, Freklimar Hechidami, what's the case? Either katan varmi minach zav nafilu rishonami. If the guy says, yes, you did get your 25%, so then even if the guy never sold it, even if it was the first guy who bought it from the sikrikon, he's believed to say, look, I've had it for 3 years, and I gave you your 25% already. I don't have the shtar anymore because it's been 3 years. If they never claim that they paid the 25%, then even the second guy, it shouldn't work. Meaning then, why should the second guy have any sort of taina if they never agreed to pay, if he never claimed that he paid the 25%? Of course, any chazaka, sheni mo taina, is not a chazaka. You can't say, someone lives in a field for 3 years, and then the original owner says, what are you doing here? And you say, well, no one ever said anything to me, so I'm here. You throw him out then. He needs to have a taina of how it is. So if he doesn't even claim that he paid the 25%, of course it's not his. Of course he loses. Some of Sheshus Liolam Dlokata, and they know the case is, the guy never tainted anything. We make a taina on his behalf. But had it been the first guy who was initially responsible, the guy who actually bought it from the sikrikon, who was initially responsible to pay the 25%, so that guy has to make the taina himself that he paid it. If he doesn't make that taina himself, we don't make that taina on his behalf. Says Gemara Vayta, Tana Rabbanan, Abba Machmas Chov Machmas An Paros. Let's say the guy can take your field away, not because they're a sikrikon, but either because they have a certain chov, you owe them money, or Machmas An Paros, which Rashi says, stam, they like to steal Jewish fields. So if that's why they're coming to take your field, it's Gezel B'Alma. But there's no chance that he's out to kill you or anything like that. So Ein Bo Mishum Sikrikon. There's no din of Sikrikon in that case. So Van Part, what does that mean? There's no din of Sikrikon. It means that if you look at Rashi, that if you keep it for 12 months, you don't have to give 25% of the Bailim like the Chacham made a Takana by Sikrikon. Rather, you don't have to. You're unable to just give 25% to the Bailim and then keep the field. If you took the field, if you bought the field from one of these guys, from someone who collected it, Machmas Chov, or someone who stole it from the Jew, you need to return the whole field to the Jew. You need to return the whole field back to its original owner. You can't just give 25% and say, now it's mine. The whole field's got to go back. So then the price says, Van Paros Atzma, Sricha Shetisha Shnemas Chodesh. And the Anparos, the ones who confiscate, there's a confiscated field, when there's a field that was stolen, you need to give 12 months for the original owner to try to get it back. So, Frek the Gemara, wait a second. How does that first halacha shtim with the second halacha? V'amrit ein b'mishum sikrikon. You just said that there's no din of sikrikon. The idea of giving 12 months is a din in sikrikon, that for 12 months we allow the original owner to try to get it back. After 12 months, you can buy it and just pay 25% to the original owner and then you can keep it. That's a din of sikrikon, but we just said the din of sikrikon doesn't apply to anparos. That there's no such din by anparos, that you always have to give the whole thing back. There's no 12 months. Sachli kamer sikrikon atzma tzricha shetesh yud beis chodesh. Yeah, we misspoke. When we said that there's a din of 12 months, it wasn't talking about the din of anparos. It was talking about the din of sikrikon. That sikrikon has 12 months. Eino chinami, by anparos, you don't have such a thing. Amar Rav Yosef Naktina, and eino anparos b'bavel. We have, he says, we assume that there's no such thing as anparos in Bavel. No one steals fields in Bavel. So, frankly, Maravak Chazin and Deiko, what are you talking about? They steal fields all the time in Bavel. Eleima ain din anparos b'bavel. No, we don't have a special din of anparos in Bavel where you have to give the whole thing back. My timer, why not? Because there is an avenue through which the guy can complain about his field being stolen. There are courts that will go and will listen to him and will try to work it out for him. If the original owner never went through that system, so we assume that he was mochel the whole thing already. And therefore, if you buy from the anparos, you don't have to give it back to the original owner. You can keep it yourself. If the original owner wanted it back, he had who to go complain to, and he didn't. It's his own fault. Gidol bara yloi kabel ara betaska mibrei baga. Gidol bara yloi. They used to share the tax responsibilities over certain large pieces of land. Each owner of a smaller piece of land within the large piece of land would give their share of the taxes. Now, one of the owners would go away and if he went away, so he wasn't giving his taxes anymore, it risked that everybody would lose all their land because this guy wasn't paying his share of the taxes. So Gidol Barei Eloi took upon himself that he would take that land in exchange for paying the taxes on that land while the real owner was away. So Viyav Zuzi Detlashin, but he paid 3 years worth of taxes in advance for the land. Lesof Asamar Vasa Kamai. After 1 year was over, the original owner came back. So Gidol Barei Eloi says, well, I've already paid 2 years advance taxes. Now, the government didn't buy that. The government said, look, you paid your tax, but whenever it changes ownership, the new owner is going to have to pay the taxes over again. So the government's going to charge taxes again for the next 2 years. So Gidol Barei Eloi says, well, I want to be reimbursed for the extra 2 years that I paid. The original owner says, what are you talking about? He says, Amru Lei Shasa Kamaisa Diyahava Sakhalta. The 1 year that you paid, you already enjoyed the land. Hasha Nanya Vina Ananachlinan. From here on in, I'm paying taxes anyway, so I should get to keep the land. So Asul Kamed Rav Papa, they went to Rav Papa, what to do? Savar L'michlevei Tirfa B'nei Baga. So he wanted to write a shtar that Gidol Barei Eloi should be able to collect from the other people in that area the money that he laid out for the taxes, for those extra 2 years of taxes. Amle Rav Huna B'rei Rav Yishol Rav Papa Yimkein Asis Sikrikon. You've made this like a din of Sikrikon where you can't lose, right? The Gidol Barei Eloi can't lose, just like a din of Sikrikon where the original owner can't lose. Ela Amle Rav Huna B'rei Rav Yishua He Niach Ma'osav Al Keren HaTzvi. He says, no, the halacha is he put his money in a very dangerous place. It's like he put it on the Keren HaTzvi, and the Tzvi runs extremely fast, and you lose your money when you put your money on the Keren HaTzvi. Forget it, he's not going to get his land back. Okay, we'll pick up from there tomorrow.